This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Listeners, today we welcome your questions for registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. She joins us once a month, usually on the first Monday of the month, to talk about diet and nutrition. And so if you have questions about diet and nutrition, give us a call. Susan will do her best to help you out. Here are the phone numbers in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Susan Kundrat is a sports and wellness nutritionist and the owner of Nutrition on the Move. She specializes in developing personalized nutrition plans for athletes as well as the general public. She's an adjunct lecturer with the Food Science and Human Nutrition Department at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's a frequent contributor to magazines on health and fitness, and she is the author of 101 Sports Nutrition Tips. You'll find her on the web at
nutritiononthemove.net.
Questions about diet and nutrition are invited. Again, those phone numbers, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
It's a beautiful day.
Oh, it is. It's a wonderful day outside.
Yeah. We've got a listener who would like to talk with you. So let's take this call. Listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
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 I recently had a blood test, and all of my numbers were within the normal range except two. And I was wondering if you could tell me if diet would help those. One was glucose, and the range was 60 to 99, and mine was 103.
Okay.
So is there some food I should, is it sugar that I'm eating too much of, or what?
Well, with the blood glucose level, that can be a little bit high, and that's certainly not very high, just a tad bit, as you can see, over the normal range. That usually, if that's a little bit high like yours was, often they'll test it again sometime just to make sure that it wasn't, you know, it's not truly high. But it basically just a value that shows us what your blood sugar level was at that time that you had the test. And so, you know, what it could indicate, if it's high consecutive times or if it gets higher than that consistently, then it might say, gosh, maybe you're not breaking down blood sugar the way you should. Now, at this level, many people have blood sugars at this level, and the next time it'll be a little bit lower in the normal level. So it's not really considered, you know, real high at that level by any means. So
now, the second one that was high, and this was a good bit higher than the average, was something called BUN. I'm not sure what that is, but the range was 6 to 20, and mine was 32.
Mm-hmm.
And now, I don't know if that's related. I have just one good kidney, and I wonder if that was related to that.
Yeah, that's one of the tests. The BUN is blood urea nitrogen, and it's one of the tests that's looked at for kidney function. And so that can be high again for other reasons. One high number, typically they'd check it again if they were concerned. You know, if your doc was concerned, probably he or she would check it again.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes if you're a little dehydrated, that'll show that it's high when you get your blood work done.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing, we look at that. Usually they'll look at that, and they'll look at a host of other tests to say, well, if several of them are high, they might be concerned. But it all depends on your own medical history, whether your physician might be concerned about that particular test.
Uh-huh.
But often, I think with a lot of blood tests, if they're a little bit high, maybe it's just one or two, then they may say, well, we'll check that again later. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would encourage you to do, maybe to ask your doc, say, should I be worried about these in my situation, or would these be normal for me
mm-hmm.
with my history?
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of clients who do have blood sugar that run, you know, maybe in the low 100s, between 100 and 120, and often they will periodically get that checked just to make sure it is not creeping up, so there's
mm-hmm.
nothing else going on. But often it'll just turn up high, or BUN will turn up high, and then the next time you'll be better hydrated, it'll be normal. So,
thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
You're very welcome. Other questions are invited for Susan Kundrat, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 333-WILL, 800-222-9455. WILL. Is there anything you'd like to mention this afternoon as we're getting underway?
Well, I thought there was an interesting article that I thought I'd talk about just for a few minutes in the recent issue of Prevention. You know, long ago, I remember when I was in school, and Prevention from my dietetic professors was considered sort of a way out there magazine, you know. But it's not really way out there now. I think there's a lot of really great information. One thing I really like about Prevention is you can read through it in a short time and really get the gist on a lot of studies. So that's good. And now they have a lot of dietitians, exercise physiologists, really people, herbal specialists who write for them. So I think it's pretty sound information. But one guide that I thought was really interesting in here is called the Ultimate Eat Out, Eat Healthy Guide. And of course, we eat out more than ever before. I had a client the other day. I said, how many times do you typically eat out in a week? She said, well, two or three times a day would be typical.
Wow.
And I don't think that's that unusual for a lot of people now. They might eat out lunch, and then if they're not going to cook at night, they're just going to pick something up maybe and bring it home. And so a lot of people are eating breakfast at home maybe, or not having breakfast, which is another concern. But when you look at eating out, I think one of the things is, depending upon where you go, things might sound healthy, but they're really not that healthy. And I just wanted to give a few examples. Here's one, for example, and this article goes through a lot of different places you can go out to eat. And here, for example, if you went to Ruby Tuesdays, which does have some healthy options, there are some good things you can get there. One of the things that sounds really good, fresh chicken and broccoli pasta. Doesn't that sounds inviting and healthy? And as ordered, it's 2,200 calories and 137 grams of fat.
Wow.
So for most of us, of course, that's more than we would need in a day. It comes with buttered toast. And so this is one of the recommendations for splitting it, or certainly to make it better, try to skip the toast and as much of the cheese, and maybe try to order more broccoli if you can on the side. But you can see how you look at something like that on the menu, and it sounds like it'd probably be a very good choice, even if you're watching your calories. And so one of the things, just to remind people when they are eating out, that we typically are going to get a lot more calories than we bank on. There's no question about that. And then anytime you can think about splitting an entree or adding a salad and splitting something, or particularly looking at the extra sauces and cheeses, because that's where we do get a lot of the extra calories that we might not put on ourselves if we were at home. So we wouldn't get those extra calories as much. But we can talk more about that later, too, if we have time. I think eating out, typically in the summer, too, we might tend to grill out more, but also go out more and eat out more. So, you know, it's kind of a time to think about some of the things we could do and strategies.
Yeah, okay, very good. Let's talk with another listener. Caller in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. I've called in before and asked you this, but I don't remember what I did with the info. You gave a website where I could look up the calorie, fat, and fiber content of different foods, especially fruit.
Yes, there are some different ones. One of the websites that I use a lot that I might have mentioned before is called Nutrition Analysis Tool. And you can get it through this website that used to be, it was actually developed at the U of I here in Urbana. And it's just www.nat.uiuc.edu. And if you pull that up, it'll actually take you to a longer site. That's the same program, but a different site. But you'll be able to put in any food you want on there, and it'll pull it up. Also, if you do just a search, the USDA, usda.gov, and the USDA has the big databases where you can also put in nutrition analysis, and you should be able to pull up a myriad of databases through the USDA. And that's another good thing, too.
Where do you put in nutrition analysis?
In your search box, I would guess.
Well, why do you do that when you've got the website? I'm not.
Well, I'm saying if you use this NAT Nutrition Analysis Tool website that I just mentioned,
right?
In there, that'll come up a main page, and then you can actually put in, I think they have a NAT2, they call it, which is, I think, their most recent version. You can click that, and then you could certainly just put the foods in right there. Mm-hmm. It may ask for your age and activity and those kinds of things to get an idea of your needs. Mm-hmm. And then you could put the food in and then do analyze, and it'll bring up whatever the analysis is for that food.
Okay, and what about the USDA Gov?
Yeah, the USDA has a lot of different analysis tools through their nutrition area, and that's why if you come up, I can't remember the exact website for that, but it's through the USDA website. They have different tools under their nutrition analysis where you can actually, for example, if you wanted to pull up a list of, if you were concerned about getting more iron in your diet, and you want to pull up a list of all the iron sources of foods, from the most, the foods with the most iron to the least, they have lists on that too that you can pull up. And the main database, the real big database that a lot of these other ones pull from, is based off the USDA. So that's kind of the mother of all databases that we use in a lot of other programs.
But how do you find, like, say I want to know how much fiber an apple has or a pear, and I'm on USDA.gov, then how would I find that there?
I don't have the actual website for that. I think Celeste is pulling that up.
Yeah.
But we could put in maybe diet analysis as the search tool or nutrition analysis as a search tool. And
on Google, then? Right?
On USDA.
Oh, they have a search option on the website.
Yes, they sure do.
Okay.
Yeah, and then in there, they should be able to, to find it there. But through the USDA, they have a nutrition link through the USDA, and then that's another way you could sort of go. It is a little cumbersome because it's such a huge site. The nutrition analysis tool one might be the fastest and easiest way to do it.
On their site.
No, that's a different site.
Oh, the first one.
Yeah, the NAT.
NAT.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that main one is just www.nat.uiuc.edu, and that may be the simplest one.
Okay.
Not as comprehensive, but very simple to use.
All right. Did you have anything to add, Celeste, that you found?
No, I think that probably the NAT is going to be an easier thing to navigate because if you put nutrition analysis into the USDA site, you come up with so many results here. Might want to kind of narrow your search terms down a little bit. So
okay, and what's Susan's website again? The new
Nutrition on the Move, www.nutritiononthemove.net.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay, you're very welcome.
And I actually can add, I hope the listener's still there listening, I just looked up, which I should have done first, in my book that I have with me, and I do have the USDA one, so I'll go through that one quickly. It's just www.nal.usda.gov/FNIC/food comp. That's a long one, I know. But
yeah, we know what we can do is we can put these links to these things on our website.
Oh, that'd be great.
Later
this
afternoon. We'll get them on our website, on the Afternoon Magazine website, linked to the interview that we're doing now.
Excellent.
So,
excellent.
Okay, very good. I think we've got another call that's come in. Let's take this call. A listener on a cell phone, line 2. Hi.
Hello. Talking about web resources, I had one I thought I'd add. This is a really great website for looking up what's in food, in fast food and chain restaurants. It's called Dottie's Weight Loss Zone. And if you just Google that, you'll be able to find it. And you click on the restaurants link, and there's a listing of, I don't know, it could be a couple hundred different places where a huge portion, if not everything they have on the menu, is broken down. It's kind of done in a Weight Watchers kind of way. So it's like Weight Watchers points, but you can also see calories, fat, fiber, sodium, and I think there's one other thing. It's a really great site if you want to figure out what you're eating when you're eating out.
Okay, and give it to us once again.
I can't give you the URL, but it's called Dottie's Weight Loss Zone. And if you Google that, someone at WILL could get that website and then add it to the others.
Okay. And is it Dottie, D-O-T-T-I-E-S?
D-O-T-T-I apostrophe S, actually.
Okay.
Just Google Dottie Weight Loss Zone. I think that'll
okay. Okay.
So that's all.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Our guest this afternoon is Susan Kundrat. She's a registered dietitian. This is a monthly program we do on diet and nutrition. If you'd like to join us with a question, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222. WILL. You want to give us a healthy suggestion from the prevention article?
definitely. Here's an example. For example, at Arby's, which might be a typical place people would go, chicken salad with pecan wrap and broccoli and cheese baked potato. Let's say if that were your meal and you ordered it just as is, it's about 1,200 calories. But if you cut down on the shredded cheese, but make sure you have just a little bit of broccoli and a little bit of cheese on your potato already, that's going to bring that down quite a bit to about 750 calories. So, for example, I think people sometimes think of baked potato because it gets a bad rap. That's not necessarily, you know, think, well, that's a white starch or it's not healthy. It's a great option for eating out. The only thing you need to monitor is what you put on it. And so, again, anytime you can still have the veggies and maybe put a little bit of butter or a little bit of sour cream on it, that cuts down fat tremendously. And I do think that goes along with a lot of the restaurants to eat out. A lot of times now you can find really good salads. The most important thing is to watch the dressing that you do add, of course, and if there are any extras. Sometimes if you drop the croutons and drop some of the extras off a salad, you're in better shape in terms of calories, so that helps as well. A couple other things that were mentioned here, too, even something like if you go out for pizza, for example, you know, looking at the crust. So if you are trying to cut down calories a bit and use a real thin crust, that might drop your calories in half for a slice of pizza. So it's amazing how many calories are actually in the crust if it's a thick crust. So no question to do that. And it's always fine when you go out for pizza to say, well, could you just use half the cheese if you're trying to watch, because that's where a lot of that fat comes from, too. So those types of things, just being a little bit more assertive when you do order, that makes a huge difference when you're eating out.
Okay, very good. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. The numbers if you'd like to talk with Susan Kundrat this afternoon. Harriet Williamson, our producer, clipped out an article that was pretty interesting that was in the New York Times earlier this month, and it's about trail mix, and the headline is "Trail Mix Isn't Just for Hikers." This is if you're going to be doing some traveling.
Oh, sure.
The article basically is saying anxiety can stimulate hunger and thirst, making a bad trip even worse.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're suggesting is that you be prepared, whether you start out at home preparing some snack foods, healthy choices for, you know, getting out there and doing your thing, traveling, and we're right here at the beginning of the big vacation season, either doing that at home or when you get to a place, you're on your way, say, whether it be the airport or you're passing a supermarket on the road, stop and get some items and, you know, put it together. And and we've heard horror stories, you know, about airport delays. So that sounds like a really great idea. There are a number of registered dietitians quoted in the article, and a number of the things that they suggest. Peanut butter on whole grain bread, or bought in 3/4 ounce portions and used as a dip or spread on crackers. Peanut butter sandwich, nutrition bars. Putting together roasted almonds, cashews, dried apricots, that kind of a little mix.
And exactly.
You have provided us in the past with a number of suggestions, quick snacks on the run. And if folks are interested, we'd be happy to send them a copy of this if they just send us a self-addressed stamped envelope, and we'll get this out to you. Quick snacks on the run, energy mix, energy mix plus, and then A dozen other
quick snacks.
Quick snacks.
Well, I think that's a really good point, because being prepared is so helpful when you're traveling. And I think it does take some of the stress away when you know you have some snacks available. And then, of course, it makes it a lot easier not to buy the box snacks. Like, I was traveling not that long ago, and what was offered on the plane, I figured, now, how did they come up with that combination? Because it kind of went from bad to worse. You know, it was a type of thing where maybe there were a few nuts, which were okay, but then it got into some higher fat crackers and then cookies and then candy. You know, it just, the whole combination was, certainly anybody's going to buy it if they're hungry. And I would too if I'm starving. Yeah. You know, you're just going to buy what you can get a hold of. But even something like, say, as simple as trail mix, because automatically you've got, you know, if you've got some type of grain in there, even if you mix a couple whole grain cereals, you have some nuts and dried fruit, well, that's going to stick with you a while. because it's going to be a little more substantial, and at the same time it's going to be healthy for you. And anytime we add protein to a snack, it kind of lasts longer. So that's the good thing about nuts or seeds or even cheese sticks or peanut butter, like you mentioned, something as simple as peanut butter and baby carrots. A lot of kids like to eat that for a snack, and that would be a perfect snack when you're traveling.
Yeah. Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi. This is a little off of the snack area, but what's a good substitute, low-cal, non-alcoholic, for recipes that call for wine, both red and white?
Well, you could certainly, you know, one thing to think about with the wine is if you're, is it more a recipe that cooks with wine?
Yeah, you know, like a lot of meat recipes call for, you know, chicken and beef recipes call for wine to be added. And I've used chicken broth, but I wondered if there was other substitutes that could do that flavor thing.
Right. Well, one thing to think about with the wine, just to keep in mind that if you're cooking it, some of that will actually cook off. So
right.
That's something to keep in mind there, too. And I think the thing you want, really, like you say, is you want strong flavor. And so sometimes what you can do, you mentioned the broth, sometimes what you can do is even use something like a little bit of a strong juice. For example, you know, the real good Concord grape juice or even pomegranate juice or some of those that are a stronger flavored juice work well even with some meats, and they help to tenderize it as you cook it and add some flavor. But you don't have to add that much to it to get some good flavor. So often I'll cook with a little bit of juice added, and even if I add some extra water or something to it, then that juice will give it some good flavor as well. But like you say, you know, a broth, even a vegetarian vegetable broth or the beef broth or a chicken broth would be good as well. The other thing to think about is just, of course, what you're doing spice-wise. If you're trying to cut down a bit on calories from alcohol that you might add, could you bump up other spices? Could you add more garlic or something else to the recipe so that you still have a real strong flavor without as many calories there? But one thing I think about in cooking with a little bit of really good wine is that you really don't need that much to get the flavor. So typically that's not going to add that many calories. But definitely the flavor you get out of it would be worth it for the most part, too.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Other questions, comments are invited. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. And let me put in a plug for something else I'm going to be doing later this afternoon. Coming up later today, following the closing market report, I'll talk with Dr. David Ludwig. He's the founder and director of the Optimal Weight for Life program, OWL program, at Children's Hospital Boston. He's also on the faculty of Harvard University, Harvard Medical School.
Yeah.
And he's the author of the new book, Ending the Food Fight, Guide Your Child to a Healthy Weight in a Fast Food, Fake Food World. How to end those arguments
Excellent.
Over food. So that's coming up later this afternoon.
Great. One more thing I thought of, you know, that caller, when I was thinking of the juice, because I do cook a lot with juice or I'll add juice to crock pot meat or something like that, is another thing that works really well to add more flavor is using orange rind or lemon rind. Because that, of course, especially the orange, when you actually shave a little bit of the orange rind into something, that is so strong a flavor, but doesn't really add calories. So that's another thing to think about when you're cooking, to give it a little bit of zest like that, adding some orange zest or lemon zest to it.
Yeah, that's great. Orange beef is a really wonderful
It is.
Thing. Orange chicken, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a good flavor, definitely.
Well, we don't have anybody waiting to talk with us at the moment. You want to take up another topic? I've got something to talk about, if you'd like.
Okay, sure.
And then we'll let you take a turn.
All right.
We're slow on the calls this afternoon. The CDC is out with a new report that says 14.6% of Americans met both the dietary and exercise benchmarks, 12.4% of men and 16.6% of women. So we got a long way to go. And the thing is, we know what we should be doing more or less, but we don't do it. So what gets in the way? Is it something like it sounds healthy, like the fresh broccoli and chicken pasta?
Right. Well, I think it's a number of things. I think, you know, working with clients, I guess, you know, one thing that I see is that sometimes people need something to stimulate them to get them more concerned about their health. And whether that is, it seems like lately I've been working with a lot of people who are kind of on the borderline of maybe they don't absolutely have to go on medication for diabetes or cholesterol, but they're definitely leading that way. And so it might be for them that, oh, they're going to be able to hopefully not have to go on those meds if they do things naturally, which we know for many people that, you know, they can manage a disease state more naturally. Not everybody, but a lot of people can. So to me, I wonder if sometimes people don't get to that point where they get a little bit worried. And when they do get to that point, they start making these changes and be consistent with them. I think that's part of it. I think sometimes people just really don't realize how even doing a little bit is helpful. I mean, you know, we talk about the national guidelines and, of course, being more active and eating better. So sometimes people feel like they're so far beyond what they could achieve that they don't do anything. And so somehow I think we have to get in the middle. I mean, the new recommendations for fruit and vegetable intake, for example, you know, we've always heard five a day, five a day, five a day. Well, even the current amounts people are not meeting. But we know now really the recommended amounts with the new pyramid and from research is really nine a day. So nine servings of fruits and vegetables a day is really optimal for us to get in. Well, I think somehow we have to get people from the point of not eating any to maybe trying to get three or four and then getting up gradually. And so somehow we, you know, I think that's one thing we've missed out on. We have these national recommendations, but we've got to almost meet people where they are so mm-hmm. that if they can get 15 minutes of walking a day, for a lot of people, that would be really good. And they're not maybe going to get 45 or 60 every day, but 15 will be helpful. And the same thing with eating better. One more fruit a day will be helpful for people. So if we can somehow move little by little, I think that's what we need. That's at least something that I see where I meet people and maybe they're not eating any produce or they're really not active at all in the day. And I do think part of it, too, is just our lifestyle is it's so easy to not be active. And it's so easy. I always get a little feisty when I see people with the leaf blowers now because I think, yeah. Oh, they're not really getting any exercise with that. And how it used to be that, boy, we'd be out there raking those leaves and what great exercise that is. But our culture just, you know, there's just too many ways to make things easy for people.
Yeah. Well, it is a revelation, though, for folks who haven't been exercising if they start to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
They say, hey, this makes me feel good.
Right. And how much better you can feel with even 15 or 20 minutes of activity. And I think that's the thing. It's almost like we've got to get people hooked because it does feel really good to exercise. It does, especially after. But I mean, it does, you know, when you exercise consistently, you feel, there's no question that you feel better. You have better mood. Obviously, you know, you feel stronger. You can do things more easily. I have a lot of clients who tell me the side benefits are things like they never really thought that they couldn't go upstairs very easily, but now that's easy for them, so they don't think about it. Or it's easy when they lift their grandchildren and they don't get sore the next day from having done that lifting because they're doing some just real basic weight training and those kinds of things that make daily life much more fun because you can do more things. And so it seems to me we have to be able to get in the middle with both activity and eating too. You know, one thing that I really encourage people to do this time of year is to really make a commitment to trying to, in this community especially, but so many places now, you can buy more local food and as the farmers markets come. And I really feel like when people eat more locally grown food, they take more ownership of what they're eating. And it often tastes so much better because it doesn't have to travel a long way. And so that's one way people can get very excited about eating more fruits and vegetables is, you know, there aren't too many people I know who don't like locally grown sweet corn and you don't like locally grown tomatoes and the flavors of those because it's so different than what you can get when something's been shipped in.
Yeah.
And that's a way to sort of get hooked on eating more produce this time of year, at least starting to see what's available now, maybe the greens and the, you know, fresh spinach and things that might be available coming up.
Yeah, and I believe that the farmer's market opens this weekend.
Yes.
In Urbana, and there won't be sweet corn or tomatoes
no.
yet, but something to look forward
yeah,
to.
Yeah, but there could be some good green mix, and there could be, yeah. you know, just even being out there gets you in a mode to eat healthier, I think, just walking around outdoor farmer's markets.
Let's take another call now. Listener in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
I have a question for Susan.
Okay.
For somebody working at home that can't always resist the temptation of snacking, are there good snacks that you would recommend to have on hand, especially to get calcium and fiber?
Sure. I think, you know, a couple things you want to look at. If you're looking at calcium and fiber, here's a good one. If you actually take a yogurt. Now one thing you got to think about with snacks is they have to be portable and easy to grab. And I always feel like a snack has to be something that, you know, you could eat as almost as easily as a couple cookies or a candy bar or something. So even something like a yogurt cup and putting a little granola in there with a little bit of nuts. So automatically you have yogurt, which has protein and calcium. And if you throw a little nuts in there, then that's certainly going to be good for you in terms of vitamin E, and it's going to have some staying power. You know, something like yogurt, because it has protein, will stay with you a little bit longer, but especially if you add something else to it. So, you know, a good rule of thumb is to say, can you add a high-protein food to a high-carbohydrate food, and particularly if you can get more fiber? So, for example, if you have, you know, even a half of a high-fiber bagel and you throw peanut butter on it, well, that's actually a really good snack because the peanut butter is protein, it has fat, it's going to stay with you, and the whole grain bagel is going to have more fiber, it's going to, you know, be a really good choice as well. And when you eat something like that, you can always add a fruit to it too, add some grapes or something, but you know that you ate. Rather than, I see a lot of people who maybe eat a few crackers that are just, they might be low fat, but they also don't have much fiber, they're not whole grain, and before you know it, you've eaten 20 or 30 crackers, and you're not satisfied because it just doesn't stay with you. And so the idea of nuts or cheese or yogurt or peanut butter or something, and you mix that with a whole grain or a fruit or veggies, and that way you've got a protein and you've got a carbohydrate together to be a snack that's going to stay with you.
You mentioned yogurt several times, so I have another question about yogurt. If you just read the label, it has typically fairly high sugar content. I wonder if a lot of it is lactose and if it's better than just getting, you know, sugars and some other things.
Well, the one thing about yogurt, most yogurts, a lot of the lactose is already digested. It's basically already broken down, which is why, you know, if people are lactose intolerant, typically they can handle yogurt. Not everyone can, but a lot of people can handle yogurt when they can't handle milk if they do have lactose intolerance. But, you know, you bring up a good point because many, many yogurts, if they are sweetened, they might have a lot of added sugar added to them. Those with the highest sugar amount, usually it's because sweetener was added or a sugar was added to that. And so one thing that you could do with yogurt is you certainly could get a low-fat or non-fat plain yogurt. You could sweeten it yourself with a little bit of honey or a little bit of maple syrup. Or just add some fruit in that, and that works well too. If you're watching calories, you could add a little bit of a diet sweetener and add some fruit in it, and that way you still get the sweet flavor, but you've cut way down on your total sugar. So that's definitely a possibility too. You know, one reason I really like yogurt is because it is what we consider a probiotic. And even though in this country you don't hear that much about the good bacteria that we need to be eating to keep our gut healthy, in a lot of other countries, it's very commonplace. People eat some of these probiotics every day. And especially if you've been sick or particularly if you've been on any kind of antibiotic, which a lot of people have, during that time and after, you want to add a yogurt or another probiotic type good bacteria food or supplement to get that good bacteria back up in your gut so you can digest food better. So I think all around it's just a great type of food product, yogurt or kefir, which is a drinkable form of yogurt as well.
Great. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And I think this listener would appreciate your Quick Snacks on the Run handout. So, again, you know, drop us a line, send us a self-addressed stamped envelope to WILL at 300 North Goodwin Avenue, Urbana, Illinois, 61801, and we'll send a copy of this out to you. Send it to care of the Afternoon Magazine, WILL Radio. What is it about snacks like a piece of fruit and a whole grain cracker or a healthy whole grain snack bar.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that, why is it after we eat something like that, we actually feel like we've had something?
Yeah. Well, it's typically the fiber that's in it. So fiber is the type of carbohydrate that's not digestible. So it's what adds bulk to your stool. It also can add some, basically when you have more fiber, usually you get more fluid in your stomach and more fluid in your intestinal tract, so you can kind of feel that. You feel more satisfied. You feel more full. So for one thing, it also takes longer to get out of the stomach and digest. So, you know, part of what we're trying to look for when we have a snack is, are we going to feel satisfied? And it is true, and we've talked about this before, that it does take know, maybe 15, 20 minutes, maybe longer for your body to recognize that you've eaten something and that you're satisfied. And so one thing about fruit, particularly something like an apple or fresh fruit that takes a while to eat, is that that means time's on your side that way. You know, you're taking longer to eat, so it may take longer or maybe take a shorter time for you to register that you've actually eaten after you're done. But I think that fiber, you know, fiber is something that we probably don't pay enough attention to. I mean, typically people, if they have maybe constipation or their gastrointestinal problems, they might pay more attention to fiber. But just from a weight management standpoint, eating foods with more fiber really do help you feel more satisfied. You know, for example, you look, let's say if you made a bran muffin from whole grain cereal of any kind, you know, you could certainly make it from any kind of bran flake or bran bud type cereal. And you make a muffin like that and you have that as opposed to a piece of white toast, which might have a very similar caloric content, you're certainly going to feel much more satisfied eating the bran muffin. And then if you do add something with protein in it, we know that that, again, slows down digestion. So you keep the food, you know, in your system a little bit longer, gastrointestinal system a little bit longer, and then that helps you feel more satisfied as well. And protein also has other ways that it kind of aids satiety. And so for people looking to not have a lot of calories but eat throughout the day, which is really what we recommend, I think anything you can do to put things in single serving sizes or buy something in a single portion size is really helpful. You know, it kind of goes along with those studies we have. We find now where people, when they do eat, if they're monitoring what they eat and they use some of the prepackaged meals as opposed to regular meals, then often that will cut their calories down as long as they've got something else they add in with fiber, like a big salad or something, because it's just that's your portion. And so that's what you're going to eat. And if you get used to eating that, those foods, as long as there is something else to fill you up, you're probably going to be in pretty good shape.
Yeah. I wonder if something as simple as just the act of chewing also signals to your brain that you're eating.
Right.
You know,
I think so.
Apple is more work than a cup of apple juice.
Exactly. It is. And it's that idea of we like, you know, like the feeling of eating something and you've got something in your mouth. You know, people talk a lot about, you know, being more satisfied if they have something in their mouth. And so no question, you get to experience the food. And that's why I think it's so important for people to eat things that they do like. I mean, we always need to push ourselves to try new foods and those kinds of things. But particularly with fruits and vegetables, that if it's something that you do like, you're probably going to be more satisfied because you enjoyed eating it, rather than just making yourself eat something. I have a lot of clients who come to me and say, I'll work with you as long as you don't ever make me eat a salad, because they've been on diets where all they've eaten are salads. And I said, well, you don't have to eat a salad working with me, but you might eventually want a salad again because when you haven't had one for a while, you might find that you do miss it. But
is that part of the problem that we make this so punishing?
We do make it punishing. I think we definitely do. I mean, one of the big challenges particularly when people are trying to lose weight is I think first we have to eat to feel satisfied and find new foods and figure out what we need in terms of portions. Then we can worry about the weight. But I think what happens sometimes is we come into a situation, or I'll have clients who come in and they really have a weight goal in mind and they want to see this amount of weight loss per week, or then they feel like they're doing something wrong. And there are a lot of things in our body we can't control. We might burn more calories one week because we're fighting off an infection. And the next week we might burn fewer calories because, you know, our body just is conserving energy for one reason or another. And there are so many factors that we can't necessarily control. So I think sometimes we set ourselves up to feel bad because we expect to be a certain weight and move at a certain level. And we don't always know what that's going to be. I could do the best figures and it's still difficult to tell exactly where someone's going to be.
So maybe instead of talking about diet and exercise, maybe what we need to talk about is the pleasures of food and playing.
Exactly. Exactly. What kind of things do you like to do? What kind of activities do you like to do that you might do more often? And really the bottom line is moving your body. And once you move your body more and feel more comfortable, you probably want to do some things with some more intensity. But the bottom line is getting out and moving your body and seeing what you enjoy doing. That is certainly really, really helpful. And all that kind of plays along the line of what we call, you know, more the non-dieting approach. The approach that, yes, it is important for me to kind of know what calories I need and those kinds of things. But the bottom line is, you know, you've got to like the food you're eating. You've got to enjoy the kinds of places you go out to eat. You still need to be able to eat there. You know, if you enjoy having a glass of wine or a beer or something, I feel like anybody can fit that into their plan. I mean, there are ways that you should enjoy eating as well as being mindful of what you are eating at the same time.
Well, let's take another call. Our guest this afternoon, registered dietitian Susan Kundrat. You'll find her on the web at www.nutritiononthemove.net. This is the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn, and we've got a listener calling in now from Hampshire, Illinois, on line 4. Hi.
Yes, good afternoon. I was wondering if you could recommend some of the more maybe unusual fruits that are in the grocery store, and how they taste. For example, I see papaya. I've never had papaya, and I don't even know how you would pick a papaya.
Yeah, well, that's a great, you know, this is a great call, because I think that's the whole thing we're talking about, is trying some new foods. Well, a couple things to keep in mind, for example, when you're looking at produce, maybe just some basic things to look at. First of all, you really want to look at color. So when you're comparing produce and you see some of the produce that looks to be a bit more colorful, those might be good ones to choose. You know, maybe an example might be a plum, where you see different colors, but is the color pretty vibrant? That's a good idea. You also want to look to see that there's not any blemishes on the produce, and those might be better ones to choose too. When you're looking at branching out, the other thing is just to kind of check firmness. Of course, different fruits and vegetables might have different, you know, they might be different in terms of how firm, but typically you want to be able to, you don't want something that feels too squishy or too soft, you know. Something like a papaya or a mango, I've gotten those home before, and they've actually been too far gone. They've been a little bit too soft. So you want, you know, in that example, you want something fairly firm, no cuts or blemishes or, you know, marks on the fruit. And then certainly the one thing you want to think about when you get home then is maybe even, you know, give it a day to ripen, but then make sure you don't go too long, because that would be a type of fruit that you don't want to go too far so it does get too soft. But that's an example of a really nutritious fruit, because you can see the color in that. And so it's a great thing to look at. I mean, now is another good time to look at maybe some different berries that you wouldn't normally eat. People will often eat strawberries, but they might not eat raspberries, or they might not eat blackberries. And blackberries tend to be one of the highest fiber, highest nutrient fruits as well. And when they become more available at the markets, that's a good place to get them too, because they might be less expensive at that time. But, you know, I think another good example is the different melons, because sometimes people will eat a melon, maybe cantaloupe, but they won't branch out to other melons. There's a lot of different kinds of melons that are extremely high nutrient as well. So that might be another option of things to look at. You know, and the most important thing you want to think about when you go to the produce aisle is to say, well, I'm going to try to get maybe 3 or 4 different colors of fruits, 3 or 4 different colors of vegetables. And that, again, goes back to maybe that's pleasure. Boy, this looks beautiful to me. I might be more apt to eat it rather than always picking maybe the same apples and bananas and oranges or what you might normally pick. And that way, sometimes we don't think, but when we broaden the colors that we eat, we typically broaden the nutrients that we're getting. So different antioxidants are different colors in fruits and vegetables. So when you eat something very bright, you're going to be, you know, in good shape. I'll give you an example. Last night we had carrots with our meal, and we also had peaches. And so my daughter said, boy, are my eyes happy tonight. So yeah. She knew that orange was, you know, gonna maybe help her eyes, the vitamin A. So it is true that the color is so critical.
Very good. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and we're going to wrap things up here in just a moment with Susan Kundrat, and she'll be back with us next month. This is a program we do once a month, generally on the first Monday of the month. We talk about diet and nutrition. I suppose we should talk about great foods and feeling good.
That's exactly
right.
Our
monthly talk about feeling good with Susan Kundrat.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to leave us with?
Well, I think one thing that the last listener, too, is something that I kind of thought about a second ago, is when she asked about branching out, you know, one thing to really look at is the different types of greens that are out there. And again, a good place to do that is the farmers markets, because you'll find a lot of different types of greens. And we might, again, typically have spinach and other lettuce greens, but all the other greens and kale and the dark greens are just so healthy for us in so many ways. And so that might be another thing to branch out to this year if you're really looking to say, well, how can I eat some things that are more nutritious for me that I don't typically eat? And they often have very different flavors, but just using them in stir fry or always adding them to soups and stews and that kind of thing is a way to get some different nutrients, but try new foods, but they basically are very low calorie, very high nutrient as well.
And I would recommend going to the library. There are some great books that just deal, just deal exclusively with vegetables, just deal exclusively with fruits. And so then you can take that home and you can go, aha, now I know what to do with this.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, if you've never done Swiss chard, you know, you're thinking, okay.
Right, right.
It's beautiful, but what does it taste like? What do I do with it? And getting a book or two out of the library and, you know, saying, aha, this is what the author recommends.
Yes.
And this is what the author says about what this is. And now I know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Okay. We'll see you next month, Susan.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Susan Kundra. She is with Nutrition on the Move, and that's where you will find her on the web, www.nutritiononthemove.net.